Welcome to the Teach the Geek podcast, where engineer and author Neil Thompson talks with STEM professionals about public speaking, a struggle for many of us. Whether you're a novice public speaker or a proficient one, you can always pick up tips on how to improve. Here's your host, Neil Thompson.
Welcome to another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I'm the founder of Teach the Geek. I work with technical professionals so they can present more effectively, especially in front of non-technical audiences. And you can learn more about that at teachthegeek.com. That is teachthegeek.com. Today, my guest is Jamie Swindell. He is an electrical engineer turned trainer. And we're not talking about personal training. We're talking about speaker training. So I'm really interested to learn more about why an electrical engineer became a trainer, what he trains on, and then how did he make that transition? That's quite a number of questions, so let's just jump right into it. Welcome to Teach the Geek Interviews, Jamie.
Hey, thanks, Neil. Thanks for having me, man.
So I mentioned that you studied electrical engineering in school. What made you decide to study that?
It was kind of through a process of elimination. I wanted to be an attorney at first. I wanted to be a doctor at first, a gynecologist. It was for the wrong reasons, though. But I saw a knee replacement surgery on TV and I realized, yeah, I don't have the stomach for the blood and guts and all of that. So I let that go. Then I was going to be an attorney. And my mother, she said, now, you know, you don't like to read too much. So you got to do a lot of reading. You got to read about the background and the laws. It's not just, you know, stand in front of a courtroom and just have this, you know, verbal dispute with another attorney. You got to do all the reading. I said, I'm going to let that go. I don't feel like doing all that reading. And so the thing that I liked doing just kind of naturally was playing with remote control cars. And I would be the one that would be wiring the chandeliers and setting timers for my, you know, parents' VCRs. And then they would loan me out to the neighbors to set their VCR clocks and all that. So I kind of got into just working with my hands and electricity and all of that. So I thought, hey, why not get a degree in this?
You know, your path is pretty an interesting one. You know, I actually had thought about being a doctor too, but do you remember the show ER?
I do.
I used to watch that show religiously on Thursday nights on NBC. I remember watching the show and I noticed that the doctors had to sleep there sometimes and they'd be woken up in the middle of the night to do surgeries and just go on their rounds. And I remember thinking, nope, that ain't for me.
I never even thought about that. Yeah, that would have killed it for me too. Being on call, that never even entered my mind.
Yeah, and then the whole idea of being an attorney, I thought about that too. But kind of like your mother, when I realized the amount of reading that was involved, I was like, nope, not for that, either. You know, even to this day, I really don't like to read. I know it sounds like I sound like such a like an ignoramus when I say that. I got all these books on tape. I got Audible. You know, when I'm a guest on certain podcasts, they sometimes ask me, what's your favorite book? And I'm like, every time they ask me that question, I'm like, oh crap, I better come with something. I listen to a lot of podcasts, but I don't read a whole lot, but I got this one book and I use it every time. So they never catch me off guard.
Whatever works, man.
Yeah. So and then me coming into engineering, I actually became one, not because of VCRs, but I became one because my father said I should. So when I finished high school, I had no idea what I wanted to do, really. I mean, I already eliminated doctor and lawyer. So what's next? So he said, become an engineer. I said, all right. I got no reason not to.
I can totally relate, man.
Yeah, man. So now you get a degree in electrical engineering. What type of work did you do when you graduated?
So I did more so IT work. I worked for Johnson & Johnson. And so I worked in their computer room and managed the computer network and, you know, did all the wiring and routers and servers and all of that kind of stuff. So me and a few guys, we would just make sure all the computers and everything was running smooth and we would jump in when there were problems. So that's mainly what I did.
Okay. Well, obviously you didn't stay doing that because I mentioned in the intro that you're now a trainer. So what made you decide to become a trainer and what was that transition like?
Well, I really got tired of corporate America, just the rules and regulations and what you can do and what you can't do and just all of that. And I didn't like rush hour traffic and I didn't like, you know, dealing with the corporate structure and all that. So I was thinking, man, what could I really do like on my own, what do I love to do? And it's funny because I grew up not liking people at all. I grew up in Philly and I seen a lot of good people get robbed and, you know, shot at and all kinds of crazy crimes and stuff. And so that had a negative impact on me. I thought all people are crazy, all people are dangerous. So you have to learn to protect your neck, right? And you got to walk a certain way, look a certain way so that you're not the next victim. And so I kind of practiced, you know, being intimidating, not so that I could hurt people, but so that they would leave me alone. And so I just kind of took that into corporate America. And I would often hear from management, you know, man, you seem kind of antisocial. You don't seem to like really jive here. And I'm like, nah, I'm good. I'm just thinking. Yeah, but why don't you think with a smile? Huh? Those two things don't even go to what does one got to do with the other? You know what I'm saying? I'm focused, I'm thinking, and it kept creating a lot of conflict. And so I started working on myself. Okay, how do I think, get my job done, and smile at the same time so people aren't intimidated, so, you know, so I can move up the ladder and all that kind of stuff. And that led me into personal development. And that's when I started reading books on, you know, The Magic of Thinking Big, The Psychology of Achievement by Brian Tracy. There's so many books, just one after the next. Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. And so these types of books started opening me up. Like, oh, you know what? It's not just about your aptitude. It's how you're perceived by others that really lends to success. All right? It's not what you know, it's who you know. It's not what you know, it's about who knows you, who likes you. And so I started putting more time on the personal development side, the communication side of things, so that I could build my own business, so that I could do other things, because I've always wanted success. And my thing is, you know, if first place is an option, why settle for number two? Why settle for number three? Right. So it was the introduction to those types of materials and the negative feedback that I would get at work and with friends that had me say, okay, there's more to life and success than just knowing all the bits and bytes about the computer program and the electrical engineering and the wiring and the breadboard and, you know, all this kind of stuff. It's the other stuff. When you look at companies, look at the CEOs, they make the most money, yet they're usually not the most technical. They usually are not the one that knows every single thing about that particular system or how that thing works. They hire people to handle that type of thing. And so that's what led me to wanting to do more and step out of my shell of being the protected, tough, from Philly, leave me alone type dude, to opening myself and being okay to smile and communicate and get my points across. So those are things that led me down that path. So I started sharing this information with other people at J&J. And they started saying, wow, you've changed a lot. Like, I like this new you. Whatever you've done, keep doing that. And then people will come to me, you know, asking me, well, hey, I got to give a presentation. Can you help me present on this topic? Because I got feedback that I'm too quiet or I'm too direct and I don't, you know, massage the point. And people told me to talk to you. You seem to go into some kind of transition where you're helping more people. So then that's what led me into coaching people, training, developing. Then eventually I said, you know what? I can do this for myself. Let me just start my own company where I can train, develop, and help others. And then,
you know, when you were talking, JB, it made me think of my own life. So when I was younger, I was also told that I didn't smile a whole lot. And guess what? I still don't really smile a whole lot.
You're doing good today, man.
I didn't get the memo like you. No one at the company, you know, even they told me I didn't smile like you. Yeah, I'll smile whenever the hell I feel like smiling. To hell with your corporate ladder. That means, yes, I can't move the corporate ladder, so be it. But then you also mentioned that, you know, growing up in Philly, you felt the need to act tough because you didn't want people messing with you. I grew up in the suburbs, and I still didn't like people. I still didn't want to talk to nobody.
Oh, that's funny.
But yeah, I totally understand what you meant by when you made these changes about, like, being, I guess, more of a people person, that things kind of opened up for you, and then you realize, well, why do I need to stay here? I can go out and start my own thing. So now you start your own thing. You're a trainer. What exactly do you train people on?
So entrepreneurship. So leading people to that process of starting their own business. You know, it's the same thing I did. How to have guide them through that. Also speak on communication, leadership, and conflict resolution, conflict management. Those are the main things. I'm really good at resolving problems. You know, the whole idea of being an engineer, it was not so much about what to think. What I loved about the experience, it taught me how to think, right? How to find out what is the issue? What's the problem? Why is this switch not coming on? Right? It not coming on is a symptom, but what's the actual problem? Where's the disconnect? Where are things not lining up? Right? Where are things going off astray? So that same mindset, that same framework is what I brought into communication and leadership and conflict resolution. Right? There's some kind of a problem why this person is not working with this person, or why this department is not working with that department. What's the issue? Let's go back. I know you say it's always been that way. I understand. Right. So let's go back. Where did it go off? Y'all were rocking together at one point, and then it started going. What happened there? I want to know that. Where's the disconnect? So there's things like that. You know, you say that you can't present because you are an engineer, you're a scientist, you're whatever. And people like you don't speak. That's not part of your personality. Wrong. It was not part of my personality either. It's a learned behavior. See, people today think that I am gregarious and I'm just out in the open and talking to people and having fun. No, I've learned to do that when I'm in a public setting or when it requires that, or it will give me an advantage to be that way. But left to my own devices, I'd be in a cave by myself, reading the book, checking my phone. You know, I really enjoy quiet time, being left alone. I do most of my best work between 12 midnight and 3 a.m. Why? Because all my family sleep and they can leave me alone. So I just get some work done. So yes, so those are some of the things that I teach. How do you really tap into what's important in that situation to get the job done? It's not about your personality. It's a learned behavior. So anybody can learn how to speak, how to communicate, how to get along with other people, how to smile. You know, here's a funny story, man. When my manager initially told me that, you know, you seem antisocial because you don't smile. When I read How to Win Friends and Influence People, it has a whole section about smiling. I'm like, man, dude is really serious about this smiling thing. So I actually put a mirror next to the telephone, and then I would practice smiling every time the phone rang. It felt so awkward and so corny and so weak. But after a while, you practice anything, it becomes natural. I practice not smiling and trying to look intimidating and tough in Philly for many years. So it became natural. Well, conversely, I started practicing smiling. Then that became natural. So now it's actually easier for me to smile than to try to look tough and menacing. So it's all learned behavior.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely something that for me is definitely a work in progress. This whole idea of smiling, just oftentimes I think people want you to smile because they want you to be, I guess, they want to be more comfortable. It's about their own comfort. If you're smiling, it's a sign that you're non-threatening. You're a good person. You're this and that. But it's just, oh man, I smile when I think something's funny. I smile when I feel like smiling. If I'm just in my regular life, I got resting bitch face. I don't know. I don't tell you. But me you mean tell me I ain't gonna get this promotion because I ain't smile? You kidding me?
Dude, I'm the same way. When I'm in my office, I'm not being interviewed. My family's not around. I'm sure we took a picture of me at that moment. I'm looking menacing and tough and mad or something. There's some type of negative connotation to how I'm looking. But I've learned that, yes, it does make people feel more comfortable when you're smiling. So it is, so it is more about them, right? But think about it. The money that you're seeking is in their pockets. That'll make you smile, see? Indeed. So when you're thinking about expanding your business, getting more customers, making an impact in the world, you smiling is going to open more doors for you than you just naturally being however you want to be. Right. So it's not even a matter of changing who you are. I get that objection a lot. I don't want to change who I am. I'm fine the way I am. Okay, so if you speak English and you go to Russia and you try to do business in Russia, would it make sense for you to speak English?
Probably no. Not.
Most don't speak English.
Right.
If you look up and find an English speaking person, fine. But for the most part, you're going to have to learn the language of the land if you want to communicate with them. Now, if you learn Russian, does that change who you are? No. You're just changing the manner in which you communicate so that you can be heard, so that people can do business with you versus scratching their head like, well, what'd you mean? I don't understand what that means. So you're just taking on a language. You're not changing who you are. It's a learned behavior. It's all learned behavior.
Absolutely. As opposed to you saying, actually, you should learn English. That's what I know. Because it's all about me, you know.
Exactly. And if you think about smiling, you talked about being more comfortable. Just imagine walking into an elevator. There's one person there. And when you walk in, they just ice grill you. And then the doors close. Won't you feel a little uncomfortable? Like, whoa, are they about to rob me? Or what's going on? Like, your mind starts playing tricks on you. Now, that might be their natural face. Versus you walk into an elevator, the person just smiles. Don't have to say anything. You just smile. And you're like, cool. You feel less likely for something to happen. Something can still happen. But you just have a little more sense of comfort because they're smiling. It's the little things that make all the difference.
you could give people some ideas, JB. You could have some people that want to rob people be like, you know what? If I smile, that means I'm going to have them off guard, and then I can really jack them. Because they see it coming. They're smiling. Yeah, we're good.
Do that.
That's too funny. Oh man. So when it comes to the presentations that you do you have a process of putting them together? And if so, what is it?
Yeah, I do have a process. Now again, this is where the engineering in me comes out. So I'm very detail oriented. I'm very process driven, very methodical. I'm step by step. You know, so the first question is, okay, well, so you'll have the topic, whatever that is. But then the bigger question is, what do people want to walk away with? Or if I'm being hired by a company, what does this company want their people to walk away with? So what is the ultimate objective? When all is said and done, what can I be measured upon as far as was a deliverable met, right? What is that thing? Do you want people to just feel happier? They just feel better about themselves? Is it like a motivational talk where they just feel better? Or is there something tangible there to walk away with? Do they have to understand some kind of a process or a system? So what is that objective? So that's number one. Got to find out what that is, right? There's no point playing a game if you don't know how the game is played, or how do you know who won the game? Do you just play to be playing, or is there a scoreboard? Does the ball have to go through a net? Is that to cross a line? Like, what is it? Okay. So I look at that. What is that? And then, of course, how much time do I have? Right. Because I can talk as long as necessary. I like doing multiple day trainings, and I like doing hour keynotes, half hour interviews, talk. So just give me the time. All right. And then I'll look at, once I know the topic, the objective, the time, then I look at what stories can I use in that to demonstrate the point, right? Because it's so much people, we love stories from childhood, right? Your parents possibly read to you, or somebody read to you, or you saw something on TV, or cartoon or something. It's all about the story. So from birth, we've been indoctrinated with the power of stories. So if you can use stories to get the point across, number one, it won't even feel like teaching or training because you're just telling a story. And to the audience, it doesn't feel like teaching or training because they're just listening to a story. But if you can teach something through the story, then now everything is being met. I'll give you an example. When my I have a younger brother, 2.5 years younger than me. Growing up, I say he probably was maybe 8, 10, something like that. He had a real bad case of asthma, real bad asthma. There's one time he had an attack. Parents called 911, emergency, all of that. Get him to the hospital. Okay, cool. He's going to live. Everything's good. The doctor said, take him to his primary care physician the next day so we can get him set up with particular medication, blah, blah, blah. Cool. Next day, we go to the doctors. Doctor says, hey, listen, talking to my mother, I need you to give him this particular medication. It's called Slobid. It has these little balls in it. And he said, now, he's probably not going to like it the way that it is right now. What you want to do is just mix it up, open the capsule, mix it up, and his apple. So he said, we asked, what type of food does my brother like? Soft food. And he said, she said, well, he loves applesauce. Great. Mix up the medication in the applesauce, and then he should have no problem eating it. The next day, my mom gave him the medication in the applesauce, had no problem eating it whatsoever. Just like a story, you mix in the medication in the food the person likes to hear, and they get the benefit of the food without rejecting it. Because if my mother gave my brother the pill directly, or just opened the pill up on his tongue, the doctor said, no, it tastes horrible, and he'll reject it. A lot of times when we're too straight, when we just tell the point of whatever the message is, and we just, boom, give it to him, the audience can't handle it. It's too much. So if you weave it into a story, then they'll get the benefits of the medication without the foul taste.
Yeah, I fully agree with you on the importance of stories. And maybe my parents didn't read me enough stories. Maybe that's why I don't like to read now. Oh, that's funny. You know what, Jamie? I also take your point about timing. God knows how many presentations I've been to, or at conferences, especially when you're looking at the agenda and you see how long this presenter has to present. They got 15 minutes. So why 20 minutes? They're still going. Is anyone going to stop them? I mean, this is just going to throw the whole agenda off kilter, and now everything is running late. And you wonder why? Because this person didn't think that I only have 15 minutes. Let me finish within the 15 minutes to be respectful of everyone's time. I find it highly disrespectful to go over time when you're a presenter. There's an arrogance there. It's like, I'm going to talk for however long I want. It's like, because no one else matters. It's all about me. It's like, come on, man. That's messed up. And then I also take your point about when you're putting a presentation together, kind of knowing what the ultimate objective is. What do you want people to do after the presentation is done? That's right. It's funny you mentioned the idea of you wanting to feel something. I hate those presentations so much. Because when I go to a presentation, I'll bring a pen, I'll bring paper. I'm going to take notes. I'm not going for a feeling. So if I'm done after the presentation, everyone just feels good. It's like, man, I ain't come here to feel good. I felt good before I came here. I came to get something I can use.
That's true. And that's why another piece to that is being really aware of the four main behavioral styles. So they go by different names, but basically you have the thinker, the type of person that wants, like you, give me some facts and figures and details and like give me something tangible. Then you have your socializer who loves having fun, laughing, crying, dancing. You know, then you have your relator, which is the person that's like all about saving the ozone layer and making sure that everyone gets along. They're a get along gang. They want to make sure there's no conflict and everybody's cool. And then you have your driver, your director, who's about results. Tell me how fast, how much, how fast, how much, how fast, how much time is it going to take? How fast can I get it done? You know, they're goal oriented. They want to check stuff off. Okay, I got this. I got these five things done. I'm number one in my field. I'm doing this thing. Like they're like, boom, 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 the drivers. So you got to build something into your presentation to appease each personality type. Because if it's all driver, 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 then the relators are like, He's too harsh. This is too much. He's too intense. Ah, you can see them kind of revolting because it's so polar opposite to who they are. And then conversely, if your whole talk is about touchy-feely, everybody get along, smile, make friends, the directors are like, what? Get out of here, man. I'll make some money. How's it gonna make some money? What is this? I'm wasting my time. I got another meeting to go to. I got a meet up with these clients, and I'm sitting to talk, listen to you talking about smiling all day. Come on, I get out of here with this. Then your thinkers are like, "What? Well, all this sounds good, but how do I know you're telling the truth? How do I know that what you're saying is factual? Do you have any support? Do you have any reports that support this? Do you have any type of credentials? Where did you go to school? Do you have a degree? How many degrees? Why would I trust you over somebody else?" And then you also have your socializer, because you can do all this other stuff, but if you're not having fun, if you're not having them have fun, they're like, yeah, this is all good information. If I could only stay awake, this is boring. Can we get up and laugh? Can we do some jumping jacks or something? Can I give my neighbor a high five, something? Because this is good, but I can't stay awake. So you got to build something in for all four styles, and you'll make everybody happy. And then when it comes back, to the objective, you got to ask yourself, what do you want as the presenter? What do you want to happen as a result of this talk? So do you want the organization to invite you back? Do you want to be hired again? Do you want to get people to purchase your product, your book, your tape, CDs or MP3, whatever, your digital thing? Do you want them to sign up for a newsletter, a broadcast, podcast? So what objective do you have personally? And then how do you tie your personal objective tie that to the objective of the people or organization that brought you out so that everybody wins? So those are some of the things that I'll do.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the people who are listening or watching this conversation, Jamie, what would your number one tip be if they want to become more effective at public speaking or just giving presentations?
Number one tip would be to be authentic. Be authentic. Be who you are. But now, if you're going to present, you got to be more of it. So you got to be more, you got to amp it up a little bit. Nobody wants to hear a really boring, mellow speaker, even though you may naturally speak like this. When you are speaking to a bunch of people on stage, you have to crank it up a little bit, because there has to be a little bit of something that has them want to wake up, because you're competing against their other meetings and the things they have in their mind. Did I leave the iron on at home? What am I going to do for dinner? So you got these competing thoughts. So you got to break through the noise so that they pay attention to you. But again, be yourself with that. Just amp it up just a little bit. But don't try to be somebody else. Don't try to be your best impression of Tony Robbins or Les Brown or whoever you look up to, right? It's much better to be the real you than to fake somebody else.
Oh, 100%. Carbon copies are never as good as the original. So I fully agree with what you're saying there. James, this is...
get a coach. Find somebody that's doing what you want to do and reach out to them. Say, hey, can you help me? Hey, I want to get better at speaking. I'm this engineer, scientist person, and this is not my thing. Like, did you know that the number one fear in America is public speaking? Right. The number two fear is death. So that means most people would rather die than speak.
Yeah, I think Jerry Seinfeld had a joke about that. People would rather be in the coffin than giving the eulogy.
Exactly. And for the technical people, that's even greater. Like, many of us got into the technical field so we can be away from people, right? We can be in a lab, and we can do research, and we can do computer programming, and we can be behind the scenes, and we can set up systems and things so we don't got to talk to anybody. AI, right? So that computer can do everything for me. I can just be behind the scenes, pushing the buttons. So to have somebody like us have to get on stage or to be on a podcast or to speak to somebody live or audience is like, OMG, just shoot me now. Just shoot me now. It's over. So that fear is so great that left to your own devices, you won't step out of your shell. You'll just keep being behind the scenes which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you want more, if you want more exposure, if you want more business, if you want more customers, then incorporate speaking into it. Because when people see you as the expert, now they're going to be naturally drawn to you. They want to come to you for advice, and they want to know, hey, should I buy this product or that product? Should I sign up for this program or that program? What do you think about this? You know, you're an engineer like I am. You're a scientific person like I am. I trust your opinion because we're kindred spirit. You kind of see things the way I see things. Whereas this other person, I don't really trust them too much because they're too different than I am. So, but when you are speaking, you're creating credibility for yourself, your brand, your organization. So definitely incorporate speaking. Another tip you can do, which helped me out a lot, is join Toastmasters. Toastmasters is the bomb. Many companies have a local Toastmasters chapter right there in the company. At J&J, where I worked, there was a Toastmasters chapter. And it was awesome to have somebody there counting all your ums and ahs. I used to say and ah like it was his own language. and those filler words detract from your message. So to have someone counting when you're doing that, to be giving different topics, and you got to do impromptu stuff and table topics. Somebody just throw out a topic. Hey, talk about this for 3 minutes. I don't even know what that is. And now you got to think on your feet and you got to pick a position and you got to defend it. You know, it's the bomb. So Toastmasters helped me out a lot as a speaker getting started.
Yeah, I was a member of Toastmasters too for a number of years at various places. You know, no matter where I was living at, I joined a Toastmasters group. So I think that's a great advice. And then the idea of being authentic, I think, is useful too. Because as I mentioned, you really don't want to try to be somebody else, because people could typically sniff that out anyway. Plus, it's really hard to keep up trying to be somebody else. So being yourself is definitely number one. This has been a great conversation, Jamie. Thank you so much for being a guest. How can people get in touch with you?
Well, I'm in the process of updating my website. The website is godclass.org, GODCLASS.org. Again, you'll see a coming soon page right now. Also, you can see some of the talks and stuff that I've done on my YouTube channel, which is also being updated, but it's MrLifestyleSpeaks.com, MrLifestyleSpeaks.com. Again, that'll take you right to the YouTube page. I'm all over social media. Most people know me as Mr. Lifestyle. So if you just Google that or Instagram, whatever, I'm Mr. Lifestyle everywhere. Because that's my whole mission, is to equip, empower, and train people to create the lifestyle they deserve. So everything that I do is around building that lifestyle. And it comes through speaking. It comes through being authentic. And for me, is my source, God. You know, I'm a strong proponent for God and what he's done for me. So on my YouTube channel, you'll see many sermons that I've done. I'm also an ordained minister. So all of these things lead back to the source for me, which is God. He created man so that we can have dominion. Dominion means to rule, to reign, to govern. And many of us are living beneath our privilege. We think that we are just, you know, some amoeba that just grew into a man one day. And here we are. I have a different belief system around that.
Wonderful. Well, everyone, that marks the end of another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson, founder of Teach the Geek, and you can find out more about it at teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. Until next time, take care and stay safe. Thanks, Jamie.
You're welcome. Be blessed, everyone.
Well, everyone, that marks another episode in the can. I hope you enjoyed it. If you like these episodes and want to support Teach the Geek, please subscribe, share, and like on any of your favorite podcast platforms, or on all of them. Also, if you prefer to watch the episodes, head on over to the YouTube channel at youtube.teachthegeek.com. Until next time.